whenever Esther tells us we can go live. MDU's here today?
You're on.
All right. Well, Randy, you ready? Commissioner Christman.
Well done.
Good afternoon, everyone. This is Commissioner Brian Culk. We're meeting the 12th floor of the Capitol today. It's Wednesday, March 27th, a little bit after 1 o'clock. We've adjusted our biweekly meeting schedule a little bit to meet some of the three commissioners' changing schedules. So our plan today is we'll have the regular scheduled commission meeting, our admin meeting, and we've got several informals lined up. And I haven't had a chance to talk to my two colleagues yet, but we got a call from Senator Propes. They want us to come down at 4 o'clock. If we're available, they've got the amendments to our budget that we talked about the last time we were down there. So, yeah, Alana, I don't know if we've seen them yet, and we probably won't see them until 4 o'clock today. But if you want to do whatever you do, Alana, that would be fine. So that's kind of the play-by-play. I don't have any particularly special opening comments other than Commissioner Fedorchuk is a loyal UND fan. I'm sure she's hoping that the formerly Fighting Sioux win this weekend. I'll be following them very closely as they move on in the playoffs. So I will be cheering for the team from the North this weekend.
Excellent, as I cheered for the team from the South when they were competing
Look
nationally.
Perfect. So that's all that I have. Randy or Julie, I'd open it up to you.
Being married to a UND fan, I'm all in on these games this weekend, too, because it makes the weekend go a lot better when they win.
She is an all-in UND fan.
Anything else, Julie?
I just report I was in Minot this morning for a dedication of a new bulk delivery substation. I think that's the correct term. Anyway, a very large substation that's going to serve Minot for the next 10 to 15 years and all their growth and development that they're experiencing in Minot. So it was a great event, freezing cold. There was a good crowd out there, and it's just, again, was a reminder of the huge investments that companies are making in the western part of our state to make sure that people can turn the lights on and have their businesses powered by good, strong electricity and the transmission system tied all the way back to Antelope Valley Station, which I toured earlier this week and have newfound appreciation for as well. So a lot of action out there, huge investments being made to support and provide the backbone we need for the growth in our state. So congrats to Verendry and Central Power, the big players in that project.
All right, well, thank you, Julie.
You know, Ms. Chairman?
Yes, sir.
On a similar note, you know, even though it didn't come in at a level to where we had siting authority over it, the announcement yesterday by MDU and Calumet on that refinery is just, to me, such a milestone-type day for North Dakota in my 18 years in the Senate. And I know it was an old argument then already about the need for additional refining in North Dakota. And now technology and new marketing ideas, ingenuity, new investors, new opportunities have brought it to fruition. And they're out there digging right now and in the process of building it. And I think, just like the situation in Minot, it's a great example of things moving forward in North Dakota.
Absolutely. Takes trucks off the road, too, like that. All right, with that, I would move passage of items on consent.
Second.
Okay, we have a motion and a second. Any discussion? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed, same sign. Motion is approved.
Okay, we've got a slight change to the regular agenda today. Commissioner Christman has requested to go through his items first. Here, his dad's in the hospital, but he's doing okay. But in case Randy needs to take off, we want to go through his items first. So I'll turn the floor to you, Commissioner.
I appreciate that, Mr. Chairman, and to start things out, I move the commission conditionally approve revision number 3-4 to surface mining permit number NAFK8705 held by the Falkirk Mining Company to change the post-mining land use from cropland to recreational on 70.3 acres of land near the city of Underwood and to update other information and reclamation plans in the existing permit.
Second.
Mr. Chairman, this is right near the city of Underwood and by their golf course. And there was kind of a tentative approval given last summer from staff, my understanding, to put some irrigation-type pipe in the ground underneath there and kind of prepare for this possibility. And they've moved forward, and at this time, by switching this from an ag land to I'm trying to think of the term for it.
Recreation? Is that what
you're talking about? Recreational. It shortens the bond release and time for the mine. I do think that in the future we need to be cautious about how many of these are done, because I think that the whole concept with mining and reclamation has been that land is ultimately going back to agricultural use. This seems to be a rather novel situation in that it's right close to town, right beside the golf course. It works as a water gathering point for the irrigation that's necessary in that. But I do intend to make clear that I think the commission itself needs to hear about these plans way early in advance.
I appreciate that comments, because the commission in the past, we've got a variety of, I would say, choices of post-mining land use that the commission can select, and this is one of them. And so I think that's a very worthwhile comments, and as we go forward, I think that's something that we'll probably have more work sessions on some of these prior to getting to some of this point. So I look forward to that.
Okay, we have a motion and a second. Any further discussion? Sensing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Motion is approved.
I move the commission adopt an order in case number GE-13-101, granting the request of Great Plains Processing LLC, doing business as Northern Plains Grain and Milling, to operate an 8,600 bushel grain warehouse at Valley City, North Dakota.
Second.
This, Mr. Chairman, is just what it says, an 8,600 bushel grain warehouse at Valley City. That capacity of a warehouse would normally require a $50,000 bond. They do have potential expansion plans, and they filed a $150,000 bond, and staff seen no problems with their information, and so I think we should go forward with this one.
Okay, we have a motion, a second. Any further discussion? Sensing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed? Motion is approved.
Did you have any more motions today?
That completes my...
Late at Earth Harvest Mills. I didn't know if you wanted to hold that over or if you wanted to.
Oh, are we doing that? No, I thought that was its own separate.
We can handle it a variety of different ways, however you'd like to do it.
I'm fine with going through the portfolio
and then come back
and
to
then
that.
Getting that one, unless.
Okay.
Unless so, the agenda is publicized now that's coming up now.
It's on the agenda as RC3, yeah. So we could, if you want to discuss it now or vote on it, we could. Or if you want
my stuff out of order. So. this is a rather long motion. So, I move the commission inform Earth Harvest Mills Incorporated, doing business as Dakota Prairie Organic Flour Company, EHM. It will be referred to from here on in the motion. That the commission, based on information available to the commission as of the date of this motion, and subject to receipt of any information that causes the commission to reconsider this motion, will schedule a formal meeting for the purpose of acting on a motion to lift the February 27, 2013 cease and desist order contingent upon Earth Harvest Mills filing satisfactory proof with the commission that Earth Harvest Mills is in compliance with the following conditions. That EHM has fully paid all grain payable accounts due and past due as of the date EHM files the proof required in this motion. 2, EHM agrees that their total cash obligations at any given time for delivered grain will not exceed 200% of the amount of bond in place and on file with the commission. And 3, EHM agrees to pay for or convert to a credit sale contract if requested by the seller each and every grain purchase within 45 days of the date the grain is delivered. And I further move that the commission inform EHM that if the commission receives a written claim for unpaid grain delivered to EHM, the commission will direct staff to immediately prepare an application for appointment as trustee, including a declaration of insolvency for filing in Wells County District Court.
Second.
Mr. Chairman, you should know that a request for a formal hearing was submitted from Mr. Holberg of Earth Harvest Mills this morning. I have no objection to holding a hearing, a formal hearing, but I frankly don't see that moving forward with this is in contrast to whether we have a hearing or not. And this has gone on for a long time since I've been here. Reading the files, it was already old news when I got here. And there are a lot of producers out there that are counting on us to make sure that these elevators are doing business appropriately. And I think this is the correct procedure to move forward with this at this time.
Okay. I would certainly agree with Commissioner Christman's assessment. This has been around for over 3 years, the Public Service Commission. We had a memorandum of agreement that the company did not follow through with. I, as of my colleagues, I think, are very concerned about what the future holds. And I think this motion that was created, quite honestly, by all three of us had input on this, but it predominantly, I think, Commissioner Christman and Commissioner Fedorchak's thoughts on how to proceed with this motion gave a good opportunity for the lay out very clearly what the company needs to do if for us to lift that cease and desist. So I am in complete agreement that continue with this motion. But I would add it that perhaps we add for discussion today the letter on Grayson that we proceed to discuss what we're going to do with a potential formal hearing. I see them as two separate issues at this point, if that's okay with my colleagues.
My question on this whole matter is how does his request relate to this motion? And if there's any, because we're basically saying we'll schedule a formal meeting to act on a motion to lift the cease and desist if he meets these criteria. And he's saying, I want to have a meeting now, right?
If I could, Commissioner, the formal meeting is different, is not the same as the formal hearing. The formal hearing, we as a commission have to decide whether we'll even honor this because the 20-day period has passed. So the formal meeting, I think, would just be a meeting. The formal hearing, we have to decide if we're willing to go outside the 20-day window, which he's already passed, and then if he's willing to waive the announcement period to less than the period time frame so we could potentially schedule a formal hearing as early as next week, which maybe he could come back in a formal hearing, sworn testimony of why he's taking care of all these things, and we could kind of button it back up. Is the way I understand
that. Made the distinction between the formal meeting and the formal hearing, so okay.
Now this is where counsel, Julie's point, and are we tracking on this one? Okay. So, Commissioner, does that answer there?
It does.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So I don't have anything else for this.
I have nothing else either.
Julie, do you have any further comments on this?
No, I don't.
Okay.
Okay, we have a motion, a second. Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Motion is approved.
Okay. So that concludes items RC1 through RC3. And we should perhaps go back to the, unless Julie's our paperwork all scheduled, do we just keep rolling on your two?
No, you go ahead and go back to yours.
All right. I don't want to throw off our paperwork here. Okay. And Randy, if you need to go, please do what you got to do.
I'll just keep waiting for a phone call here, but thank you.
And hopefully we don't get the phone call, right? Okay. With that, item BK1. I move the commission acknowledge the amended letter of intent and reduce the previously assessed filing fee from $100,000 to $67,500 due upon filing an application in case number PU10632, Empower One LLC's proposed 75.2 megawatt wind energy conversion facility in Steele County, North Dakota.
Second.
Basically, this is an amended letter. Some of the things changed from the company's original request. And what I'll do is just review their original request. In November of 2010, Empower submitted a letter of intent to build an energy conversion facility. Things have changed since that period of time. They basically have reduced the scope a little bit from what their additional request was, and also the time frame, perhaps, for the first filing may have expired, the way I understand that. So this is an amended letter. It'll be approximately up to 75.2 megawatts of wind energy capacity, 17,000 acres of land, located in Steele County, roughly southwest of the town of Findlay, 6 to 8 miles, approximate cost in the range of $113 to $135 million. They hope to begin construction by fourth quarter of 2013. So with that, everything appears to be in order, and this is one of several wind energy conversion facilities that we have on this agenda. So perhaps the production tax credit is really starting to show its impact on North Dakota wind.
Well, we have a motion and a second. Is there further discussion?
Yes. Mr. Chairman, this isn't so much specific on this particular case, but these in general. So we're getting barraged with these requests to reduce the time frame from a year down to a month. Every one of them wants to start construction late in 2013. Hurry, get it done. Hurry, get the original process done so they can start construction in 2013 and finish sometime thereafter. Clearly, all plans that because the last few days of 2012 when Congress extended the wind energy tax credit that now suddenly are on board and they're swooping in to hurry and make use of this. They made their conscientious decision to not pursue this until they were positive that there was going to be a subsidy. And now that that became certain, as long as they get started with it this year, now suddenly it's like it has to go quickly so they can get started, groundbreak this fall yet. What does that do to our staff when we get one after another of these that want the process started within a month and completed by this fall? Because the fact that they all chose to rely on an external issue to time their project doesn't make it possible that our staff can just do an endless amount of work in a limited time frame. So I don't think we're obligated to shorten these just because that's what works out for the tax credit. And so I guess I'm curious how this affects our staff.
Sure. If I give you my thoughts, I guess, Commissioner, I think this is the same dilemma we face, whether it's a pipeline project or whether it's a natural gas conversion facility, because it seems like every company out there wants to shorten the waiting period. And one of the things that we previously talked about, and we can certainly talk about it again, is to make sure we have the right staff in place as we go forward. And I think part of that is the reason we've asked for the additional public utilities position in our budget, knowing that these type of cases are going to keep coming at the rapid rate. In these cases where, in this case, the company has filed a filing fee of $67,000, we will more than likely go out and find an attorney to help us work in this case so it will not affect our legal staff directly. Lana would still have the oversight of it. If we need other, quote-unquote, experts on the case, we usually use the citing dollars to minimize the impact to our direct staff so we're able to keep moving. But at any time, we follow the process, whether it's, you know, the companies may want a construction time frame that they're planning on, but there still needs to be historical society approval, there still needs to be the flyway approval, there all those things that normally go into place, those time frames don't shorten. What it just shortens is the waiting period that we're before we begin the case. I've always been in the mindset that better to have all these cases in front of us and then let staff prioritize as well as us what cases are coming. But then your question about workload, I think that becomes very important is why we're asking for the other position and how we deal with the legal, how we deal with the experts. But Jerry and I have talked about these cases, and he feels confident that we can move forward with these. Alana and I have talked a little bit about it. As long as we have the siting dollars available, we should be okay. But the if we were not to get that public utilities position, I think we would have to look at slowing down some of these.
If I might add, and I may need clarification, too, from Pat, the bill 1147 that passed, and I believe has been signed by the governor now, eliminates the letter of intent. So we won't be doing this shortening of the waiting period anymore.
Correct.
We will just be getting the full application on file and proceeding from there. The waiting period was just a time period that the companies had to wait between letting us know they're going to do a project and giving us applications. So there was no staff work occurring in that time. When we got the letter and waited for the application, correct, Pat? So that waiting period, which we've been routinely shortening to 30 days, is going to be eliminated. So we won't be doing this. It's just one kind of step out of the process. How long do we have to process once we have the application? Is it 6 months that we have to process the full to go through the application? And is that to the point of receiving it and issuing an order? Or what's required within the 6 month time frame?
Commissioners, if it's an application for a site, the time frame we have is 6 months after the application is deemed complete. And if it's a transmission line,
6 months. What do we have to have to an order within 6 months?
We have to make the decision.
Make a
on
decision.
The site, yeah.
Okay.
if it's a transmission line, we have 6 months to make a decision, or 3 months to make a decision on the corridor, and 6 months to make a decision on the route after the route application is done. If they use the two-step process,
mm-hmm.
If we combine the processes for corridor and route, there's a question. Mm-hmm. Do we have 6 months or 9 months? But no. But, you know, we'd always try to do it in six, certainly, but...
You can extend it for you. I don't know if Pat said that or not, but you can extend it if you need to at any time. It's just not an ironclad
okay.
6 month period. And we have always, or unless we've had a problem, we've beaten those time periods mm-hmm. pretty easily.
But to extend upon Jerry's point, though, is that as a commissioner, those are guidelines. If there's something in the hearing that you don't like, those time frames get extended. Mm-hmm. We've never felt the pressure to meet a six-month deadline if there's an issue in the table, because we can't make decisions till we get all the information.
Right. So we're taking the time needed to do the appropriate process to make sure that we're making the right decisions for the public, that we're shortening, we're eliminating a step, so we're kind of streamlining the process with the elimination of the letter of intent and the requirement that the companies request a shortening of the time frame. So that's a positive step. It's a streamlining. And we're routinely meeting the six-month window of time that we have to make a decision on these applications. So this is all, and we're beefing up staff to make sure that we stay on top of this. So these are all good things for both the public and industry, as far as I can see.
I would agree with that. I think that most of the time some of the time in our orders, we'll have orders contingent upon approval of the SHPO, approval on the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. So it's I won't say never, but it's seldom the commission who's the last thing they need to begin construction. They have to get a purchaser for this power as well. And to me, that's tying back to Randy's point, that before they had the letter put forward, they were going to move forward, the production tax credit was questionable. They couldn't maybe find a buyer. So now they've got the scenarios changed a little bit, so they're back in front of us again. But I really try to stay focused on the siting aspect of it, unless it's something that an investor owned that we would potentially see later on down the road. So anything else, Randy? Julie? Okay, with that, I still believe it's a good motion.
Right. Any further discussion? Sensing none, all those in favor say aye.
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 Those opposed? Motion is approved.
Okay, item BK2. I move the commission acknowledge the amended letter of intent in case number PU 11601
Thunder Spirit Wind LLC's proposed 150-megawatt Thunder Spirit Wind Energy Project in Adams County, North Dakota.
Second.
This one also has a slight amendment to it. They're amending it from, they're expected to begin construction in late 2013, where I think the original letter had 2012 on it. So it's a small change, but we did put it on the regular agenda just to highlight. This is down in the Hettinger area, 10 miles northeast of Hettinger, consists of up to 75 wind turbine generators, and so it could be as much as 150 megawatts of power. The estimated completion time is December of 2013. Estimated cost for constructing this project is approximately $300 million. So we're seeing some potential significant investment in wind in the state of North Dakota.
Okay, we have a motion and a second. Any further discussion? Sensing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed? Motion is approved.
Item BK3. I move the commission adopt the findings of fact, conclusion of law, and order issuing certificate of site compatibility number 33 to Basin Electric Power Cooperative, authorizing construction of two additional 45-megawatt combustion turbines at its Pioneer Generation Station in Williams County, North Dakota.
Second.
A little background on this project. In July of 2012, Basin Electric filed a letter of intent to construct the Pioneer Generation Station Phase 2, consisting of two 45-megawatt simple-cycle gas-fired combustion turbines to be located at the existing site of Pioneer Generation Station 1, currently under construction approximately 15 miles northwest of Williston. On August of this past year, we acknowledged letter of intent, assessed the filing fee of $51,000, and proceeded to go through the process. We deemed the application complete late December. We issued the notice for a hearing to be held February 7th of this year at 10:30 at Williston City Hall, and we held that hearing on schedule. I believe it was one of the first hearings, if not the first hearing, that this commission had off-site on a project like this. So it was a good project that we were all able to start in the beginning with, if you will, and now completion today. So this is a milestone, I think, for this commission. Put that in your wall somewhere, Dave. But a little background behind Basin. They're a regional wholesale electric generation, G&T. This project is in addition to their Basin Electric Pioneer Generation Station Unit 1, which is estimated to be completed next month. The project will be designed to meet all appropriate National Electric Safety Codes. It'll be owned and operated and maintained by Basin. The total cost is estimated to be at approximately $102 million. The basic need for this that Basin explained in the hearing is that the load studies that continue to develop out of northwestern North Dakota have been increased. So initially when they built this first project, it was 45 megawatts, which was not commission jurisdictional. But then in further definition of the load studies, they deemed they needed two more 90 megawatts. And so that was some of the discussion in the hearing that, quite honestly, I won't say it got controversial, but got a little heated because we wanted to know why you didn't cite all these at the same time, why the first 45 megawatt was built that was non-jurisdictional, and then all of a sudden you need two more 45 megawatts that equals 90, which is jurisdictional. And there was I had a lot of questions, I think my colleagues did too, about just making sure that there wasn't something that they were trying to do that caused us not to have to cite the first one. But I came away from the hearing feeling comfortable, but they really did their best of anticipating what the growth would be. They just weren't able to anticipate this much growth. But we did put something in the order later on that says if they wish to add to this facility, they need to come back to us. So that was one thing that was very good to put in the order. Some other things, the State Historical Preservation Office concurred that there's no significant impact. There's no exclusion or avoidance areas in the project. The project will meet all recommended EPA noise guidelines. A Basin has obtained all required construction and zoning permits. They are waiting for a permit from the health department. They're hoping to have that the second quarter of 2013, which is we're in that now, I believe. So that might be one of the things that holds them up a little bit. One of the things that came out is we had one of the landowners come to the hearing that was concerned about drainage problems. So during the hearing, the individual brought up their concerns about drainage. The company addressed them. We actually have a finding in the order that says that Basin is committed to work with landowners as needed to alleviate drainage problems that may arise from this project. So it really ties in the importance of
individual landowners coming to these hearings, because the individual came to the hearing, said their piece, and now we've basically made sure that they're going not to have any drainage concerns, which perhaps that may not have been addressed without him coming to the hearing. Other than that, everything appears to be in order. And the language that I talked about earlier, Basin shall request a jurisdictional determination from the commission under the appropriate code prior to the construction of any improvements of facilities outside the commission's designated site but within the 120 acres owned by Basin Electric. So that's the paragraph that we added in there that basically ensures that they come back to us if they want to add more generation. I just go back to the wind farms. We had a lot of these wind farms that were not jurisdictional popping up adjacent to each other, and that I would say became an issue, and now the resulting legislation is that anything greater than, I think it's a half megawatt, is cited by the commission. So I don't think we need to go down that road, but companies really need to make sure that they're doing their best to forecast what they need so we can have the appropriate hearings in place. So I don't have anything else to add to this order. My colleagues have any comments?
One comment, and that is that, you know, this one brings kind of a nice feeling for me, in that we got to participate in the hearing process, as you mentioned, instead of just looking at a file and making a decision based on information from last year. And so I'm looking forward to more of these instances as the old ones work their way through the process and we get into these where we actually got to also look people in the eye and ask questions and hear from the landowners impacted and that sort of thing. And it shines a whole different light on the case.
Absolutely.
Sure. Just a couple of thoughts. I think one of the smart elements of this project is that it is co-located or located adjacent to the One Oak. Is it One Oak gas plant? So their fuel source is right adjacent to the generation facility. So it made for a smart project, and I think through the hearing process, Basin really laid out the need for this project. They're going to be 2,000 megawatts short of power in this area, by 2030, and their projections are they're going to need this as soon as it's on going to be online within the next year or year and a half. And so it's really an important piece of the backbone, if you will, another piece of the vertebrae of the backbone that we need in Western North Dakota to provide the reliability, the stability, and to really serve business, industry, and all the new people that are living in this area. So this is, I think, one more step forward and another important investment for our state.
All right. We have a motion and a second. Any further discussion? Sensing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed? Motion's approved.
All right, thank you, Darrell. Item BK4. I move the commission acknowledge the letter of intent, shorten the one-year waiting period between filing a letter of intent and setting application to 20 days, and assess a filing fee of $9,000 due upon filing an application in case number PU13103. Minnesota Power's proposed 250 kV DC transmission line reroutes in Kidder and Stutzman counties of North Dakota.
Second.
This case is, I guess they're all kind of a little bit unique, but this one I thought was very unique, that over the last couple years, Minnesota Power purchased a line from Minn Kota, which resulted in Minn Kota's major power line being built from Center to Grand Forks. In this case, Minnesota Power is coming back to us with two reroutes that basically, my understanding is there's been water rising in those areas. They no longer have met all the NERC reliability codes, so they have to come back with a reroute. They did request a jurisdictional determination on this, and it does, in fact, fall under our jurisdiction because the reroutes are larger than normally could be done with existing law. The reroutes, the best description I can say is it's the line approximately in the Robinson, Pettibone, Woodworth area, about 6 miles north of Highway 36, I think it is, Jerry. Highway 36. So the reroutes themselves are about 20 miles apart. There are four rising water in the area. But it is interesting that the process of making sure we always meet reliability standards, the companies are following through on that. So I look forward to the hearing on this. We'll have to wait and see if it's we can do this in one hearing or two, depending on it's in different counties, but they are relatively close. The cost of these reroutes will be approximately $1.8 million. So I look forward to the opportunity for a hearing on these.
Okay, we have a motion, a second. Any further discussion? Sensing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Motion is approved.
Thank you, Darrell. Item BK5. I move the commission issue a notice of consolidated hearing concerning the proposed switched access price schedules of the companies listed in the announcements. There are numerous, several of them. So basically, I think that is the motion.
Second.
Thank you. In March of 2013, the companies listed in the announcement filed with North Dakota PSC the revised interstate switched access price schedule reflecting the revised FCC rules governing intercarrier compensation and switched access. Basically, effective January 1st, 2013, the structure of pricing has changed a little bit, and there's a public hearing has been scheduled for May 29th, 2013, at 9 o'clock in the commission hearing room. This is part of a broader change taking place in a compensation that by 2020, the intrastate rate needs to equal the interstate rate of these companies' compensation. So we had this hearing last year where the rate was reduced by a certain amount, and so we anticipate that these type of hearings will continue. The last one we did, the companies really came in, they showed their plan to reach compliance by 2020. It gives folks that may have a concern on this the opportunity to come and say their piece. But I look forward to the hearing. This is, of course, dealing with telephones, but the whole discussion about telephone compensation, USF changes, Connect America Fund, how we're going to regulate or not regulate voice over internet protocol, I think is, in addition to all the energy things going on, I think there's going to be a lot of telephone discussion here in the next couple of years as well. So with that, I think the motion is in order.
We have a motion and a second. Is there further discussion? Sensing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Motion is approved.
Item BK6. I move the commission acknowledge the letter of intent, shorten the one-year waiting period between filing letter of intent and citing application to 30 days, and assess a filing fee of $100,000 due upon filing an application in case number PU13-127, Minnesota Power's proposed 210-megawatt Bison 4 wind project in Mercer, Morton, and Oliver counties of North Dakota.
Second.
We laid out the official description of this project. Basically, it's northwest of Hebron, a few miles. This will be Bison 4. We've previously cited, I believe it's, what is it, Bison 1, 2, 3, if you can believe that. So this is one of the things that when we cited Bison 1, there was a question about how many of these projects might we see, because when Minnesota Power, back up, when MinnCota purchased that line, there was a lot of capacity in there. So some of this wind power, it's going to be interesting to see how it all plays out. But having that transmission, I think, is a big opportunity for this wind farm. This particular wind farm, up to 210 megawatts, hope to have this under construction by fall of 2013. It'll be interconnecting with a substation to be built by Minnesota Power in the area of Square Butte, which the commission has previously approved. Approximate cost on this is $400 million. So another significant investment. And once again, look forward to the hearing being scheduled on this and seeing how it all plays out.
Okay, we have a motion, a second, and further discussion. Sensing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Motion is approved.
Okay, and the final item that I have today, item BK7, I move the commission find the March 22, 2013 complaint filed by the North Dakota Public Service Commission advocacy staff states a prima facie case and serve the complaint on the respondent, Kindred Plumbing and Heating, in case number PU12-303.
Second.
This is, unfortunately, the third time we've had a complaint filed against, a call before you did complaint filed against Kindred Plumbing and Heating. This is a complaint filed by advocacy staff. The initial complaint was filed by Otter Tail, alleging that the company did not follow the proper protocol for call before you dig and do construction before the appropriate locates were taken care of. In this case, the advocacy staff has recommended a fine of $1,500 be levied on Kindred Plumbing and Heating. So by this motion today, we'll properly serve them, if you will, and we'll see what they want to do going forward. But for me particularly, this is why I think that some of the legislation that the commission put forward and others is that It's one thing if we have one individual have a mistake out there, but this is now the third time. I'm certainly not prejudging this case, but the fact that you have the third time a single company has come in front of the commission in the last couple of years is significant. And staff, my understanding, has had some challenges dealing with the company at this point, why it took so long to get to this, because the goal is never to fine people. The goal is always compliance. And before our staff ever gets to making a recommendation like this, I'm confident that they've tried many different things to work with the company. So I look forward to serving this company, and I also look forward to the hearing if needed. And I would also say, just because staff has recommended an amount, which is $1,500, the commission still has the ability to lower that amount or increase that amount. So I believe this would be under the current law, so that cap would be $5,000. But that's, I guess, the beginning point, if you will.
Do we have a motion, a second? Any further discussion?
I have two questions, Mr. Chairman. One, whatever the amount is, let's say $1,500, where does that go?
It goes to the general fund, is my understanding of that.
Okay. And then the second question is this a two-part thing, or where would the ability for, in this case, Otter Tail, be to go after recovery of their costs for the cut line? Is this the process, and this is the only penalty to it? Or do they do that through civil court, or what's that?
Sure, my understanding is the companies go after the individuals through civil court in the cases where there was fatalities. We levied our fine, and then they went through the other route to seek the relief. But one of the factors that our staff looks at when making their recommendation is, did the company pay for the damages that they looked at, that they did? Was this a repeat occurrence? So as this plays itself out, the motion today says it's a prima facie case. We serve on the respondent, Kindred Plumbing and Heating. What will happen now is they'll get the case. They'll see if they agree with it. If they agree with it, it might come back to us as a settlement agreement. If they don't agree with it, we might schedule a formal hearing where Otter Tail will come in and say their piece, the company will say their piece, and we'll make a determination. But we really don't have a play in the individual between the person who allegedly does the violation and the person whose infrastructure was cut. This is just our ability to levy fines as appropriate on those that violate the call before you dig law.
Thank you.
Did I miss anything on that, Alana? Okay. Thank you.
Any further discussion? Sensing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed? Motion is approved.
Okay, that concludes the items in my portfolio. Commissioner Fedorchak.
Okay. I move the commission issue a notice of hearing in the application of One Oak Rockies Midstream LLC for a certificate of site compatibility for the construction of a $100 million standard cubic feet per day gas processing plant to be located in McKenzie County of North Dakota, case number PU 12-656.
Second.
This is a request to construct a third 100 million standard cubic feet per day gas processing plant by One Oak in this same area. The commission constructed one out there last year sometime, I believe, or the year before. Last in November or December, the commission issued a certificate of site compatibility for a second facility, Garden Creek 2 plant, on an 80-acre plot directly north of the first Garden Creek 1 plant. And then in March, they came to us and asked to amend that certificate of site compatibility for the construction of a third gas processing plant that will be known as Garden Creek 3 within the 80-acre plot of the second facility. We're submitting this notice of opportunity for a hearing to the public. So if anybody has any concerns, questions on this project, they can ask for a hearing, and we will proceed accordingly. This project, I did a little digging on how much natural gas we're producing in North Dakota as of end of last year, and it's about 800,000 cubic feet per day of natural gas. And so obviously these kinds of projects help provide an outlet for that gas. We all want to reduce flaring and currently, I think we're flaring about 35% of our natural gas. These kinds of projects help that, help us achieve that goal. So we want to be supportive of these kinds of projects and also make sure that we're giving the public an opportunity to express their interests and concerns and ask questions about them as we proceed. So that's what this motion today attempts to do.
Thank you, Julie. I did have a question on this that we did not. We asked for a request for hearing, but is there a way that we could do this without a formal hearing? That's a question that I needed to ask for I guess Patrick or
if we do not receive a request for a hearing, we are doing it without a. The commission can make a decision without a hearing then if we do not receive a request.
But how could we? I don't know that I'd be comfortable with citing a plant of this size without having a hearing. We talk about response plans and just.
Well, I guess.
That. Since it's all in the same footprint?
That's right. That's why we've heard, we've gone through the environmental analysis and we've heard the company's choice for the site and right. We've approved the site. And this is on the same site.
Right.
And so just in case there's somebody that has a concern, we do a notice of opportunity for hearing.
But then if we get through the road of when the commissioners, we all review the paperwork as it comes in and we see something we don't like, then where do we have to restart the whole thing? I guess it goes back to a question with my colleagues that sometimes it's better to just to schedule a formal hearing and it just then you can be done quicker, if you will, other than just going along as if you don't need one, then all of a sudden something comes up, you need a formal hearing, you've delayed the process. And so that's, I guess, maybe the discussion that I'm certainly okay with this motion today, but I wanted just to kind of talk through that a little bit.
Well, and this, Pat and I did talk about this a fair amount, too, because this falls within the footprint law, correct, that was passed. What year was that passed?
Last session.
And Pat, can you kind of, or somebody who is here, speak to the intent of that legislation?
Oh, the footprint law, what we call it, the footprint law, is if the commission has approved a corridor or a site and the same company is going to come back and build something on that site, they can do that without going through the formal process by certifying that they will not impact any exclusion or avoidance areas, or if they are going to impact an avoidance area, then they could show why there is no reasonable alternative to impacting it, and then the commission would act on, make a decision about that mm-hmm. claim. This particular situation could have fallen under the footprint law, except that in the commission's order, we said to the company, if you plan on building anything else on this site, come back to it. Sort of like what you're doing with the basin case today.
Because mm-hmm. we anticipated there'd be more of these built because just there's a need.
Yeah. So if you are planning on building something on this site, then come back to the commission for and notify the commission. And the commission may determine that through a public hearing. In this case, we're doing it through a notice of opportunity for hearing.
So I think this is where this approach is sort of a middle ground, as I see it. The legislature, in the passing of the footprint law, I think intended to streamline the process.
Yes, they did.
Absolutely.
And so I think we're obligated to acknowledge that and try to proceed under that goal as well, to streamline the process and not, create extra steps if the company has already met all the requirements and gone through this once before. This, I think, safeguards us in case there's somebody in the public who wants to express an interest and we can get that input from them while also not restarting the whole process and making the company go through it if nobody does.
Well, and I wouldn't disagree with the intent of making it quicker, but the concern that I would have is that you start pancaking natural gas plants atop each other, the blast radius of these plants when they blow up is different than it was the first time. Is mm-hmm. that be the extreme concern? Mm-hmm. And so that's the concern that I bring out right away, is that if it's a matter of we could send a letter to them to say how they're going to deal with it. I guess that's, to me, is when you put these things together, the reason we put it in our order the first time is because we anticipated this. We wanted to make sure that the public safety was protected. Mm-hmm. And they may meet all the siting criteria for the, for lack of a better term, the bugs and bunnies concerns. But the safety concerns that this might bring, it may not be no different than the initial size. But if we've got a question like that, how best to deal with that?
The best thing, well, we would have an informal hearing after the notice period ends.
Okay, so we're going, all right.
And the commission can ask questions at the informal hearing and request information.
Okay, so by this notice today, there will be an informal that'll drop in there. Okay. Well, maybe we should put that going forward, because if I'd have saw that in the beginning, I might have not even asked all these questions. Because as long as we have a chance to get to the company and ask those questions, that's all I'm really looking for.
Yeah, and sometimes in our notices, we will schedule the informal as well. We'll pick a date for it, but it's more flexible if the commission just has the informal at one of their regular meetings. But anytime you want to include an informal date in one of these notices, we can certainly do that.
I don't know that we need a date, but maybe going forward, if we just put a commission can schedule an informal on this so it's in the order, if that'd be okay with my colleagues. Because I think that's my concern. If we're going to have an informal on it, then that's fine. That gives me a chance to ask those questions, or any of us. Yes, Alana.
Well, I just wanted to be sure everybody's clear that commissioners can ask for a formal hearing also.
Absolutely.
I'm sure you know that, but you don't only have to have a formal hearing if someone else asks for it.
Right.
But I agree with Commissioner Fedorchak's point about the intent is to streamline the process. So I don't need to have a formal hearing just to have a formal hearing, as long as there's the opportunity to ask questions of the company. So, okay, with that, I think I have no further questions.
Okay. I have one. So it says, it mentions that, you know, people can file comments or request a formal hearing. So if I were a landowner a mile and a half away from there and don't really like what's going on there now and wish I had raised more of a fuss about it last time, but now it's calving time and pretty soon it's seeding time, am I expected to pour through what I imagine in McKenzie and Williams counties are probably pages and pages of legal notices to see this? Or do we notify people somehow within some reasonable radius that something's going to happen there?
Our current notification is required by our statute and our rules is a publication in the county paper, a legal notice in the county paper. And when we do this, it would be 20 days in advance of, they have at least 20 days to respond. But we don't, that's all we do. That's what we do, is the county paper.
And Patrick, on this project, is your understanding that the company probably isn't doing any sort of public meetings, or is often in big projects like this, companies provide additional notice beyond what we provide for our process? Would we be correct to assume that they are not doing that in this project?
That would be my guess.
Okay.
That they're not. I'm not absolutely sure they're not, but it would be my guess.
Yeah.
Well, Commissioner Crispin, your point, I think, is a larger discussion that the three of us need to have, is that we do what the law requires with the announcements in the papers, but we've talked about how far do we want to go with email notes, with Facebook posts, with at some point requiring companies to notify adjacent landowners. There's a lot of things that we've bantered back and forth in the commission. We've always kind of settled back with, let's make sure we follow the law, and we've never really gone any farther than that.
Well, you know, to my knowledge, One Oak has been a good player out there, and I sure don't want to derail their project here with something sudden. And so I'm comfortable with proceeding as we've done it, I guess, in the past. But I would like to see us convene a session at some point and discuss this, where we're not dealing with a specific company or a specific case, but just as a policy. Because like I say, I bet you those newspapers out there are just pages and pages of legal notices, and I don't really think that we can expect those landowners to to sit and pore through them all the time. They're not attorneys. They're farmers and ranchers. And I think we got to talk about this at some point and work out a system.
I also have the same concerns and have started talking to the companies about what other additional avenues for public notice can we start using on a regular basis, whether it's required by us or whether they just start doing it as best practices. And they're pretty receptive. In other states, there's different requirements. Some states require companies to notify by letter every single landowner, adjacent lander, et cetera. So I agree with you. It's a really important conversation.
Just had one thing to add to the notification. Besides the publication in the paper, we do send it to the county officials, any county that's affected by the site, and also to the state agencies that we normally send to when we get a siting application.
Okay.
That doesn't necessarily help the landowner, depending on what the county does with it. But
that's where, if I could, I mean, Commissioner Crisman, my concern about making sure the commissioners have a chance to discuss this back and forth is very important. Where the landowners, we want to get them there, but if they're not there, I don't like the idea of just not having at least the informal, where if we wouldn't have put this in our previous order, they could have just built this thing. And so I understand the legislative intent of making things quicker and more efficient, but also that we have to protect the public interest. It's that balance, as we all talk about.
Well, and do we need to worry about the companies questioning that piece of our orders?
Oh, absolutely. They can appeal our orders if they'd like, but it's a Ilana's got an ad in there.
I think the provision is in the certification that they sign, and they're certainly free to bring up other wording, other provisions, why they might not, again, from my standpoint personally, if they have thoughts about expansion, that's the time to bring it out. You're at the hearing. The people who have come to that hearing can listen to it. Mm-hmm. And maybe that provision in that part of the certification could be tweaked because they think they're going to be doing something. And you put in some other conditions that go a little quicker but still protect people. But the company certainly can bring that up. But it's not a provision that the commission just throws at them that they didn't realize and then should have appealed. Mm-hmm. It's something earlier on that they're informed of and that we welcome their feedback on. Mm-hmm. That's the discussion they could have at the hearing.
And as we did with the case we just voted on today with the 45-megawatt plants up in Williston, we all three could see there might be more, and we read the concern, so we put it in there. We don't do this very often, put additional caveats in there, but there's times when we have.
This isn't a template that we use in every order?
No, absolutely not.
It is.
No, not the making them come back to us.
Yes.
But the siting certificate is.
No.
The making them back is.
It's in the in the certification document that we provide.
And I stand corrected. Really? Okay.
It's that four-page document that they sign.
Okay. Well, then maybe we could discuss whether if you think we don't need it in there all the time.
I don't. Again, I'm more in the mode of I'd like to see a few of these things through and see how it all works.
Okay.
The companies may not feel that way. So I'm not ready to change things, but I do know that there's been some pushback on some of that. And I'm mindful of legislative intent as well. So.
Okay.
We have a motion and a second. Is there further discussion? Sensing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed? Motion's approved.
Okay, the next one for me is relating to Otter Tail Power. I move the commission issue a notice of opportunity for hearing in Otter Tail Power Company's application for its renewable resource cost recovery adjustment factor, case number PU 13-16.
Second.
Okay. I will do my best to describe this. It's fairly complicated, but I'll try to boil it down. So this in December 28th, Otter Tail filed a request for approval of its 2013 renewable resource cost recovery adjustment factor for recovering costs associated with its wind farms. This has been this was a rider we added a number of years ago to help better account for the costs recovery on wind farms that are that is more like a bell curve over time. So they come to us every year and propose what they need for that year. The proposed factor includes updated costs and revenue information for investments in the Langdon, Ashtabula, and Laverne wind projects. In this case, the proposal would reduce the current rates from 0.00556 per kilowatt to 0.00518, a decrease of 28 cents per month for a typical residential customer using 750 megawatts. Petitions to intervene must be received by May 7th, and comments and requests for a hearing must be received by May 15th. What I think is the most important piece of this is that this rider will be used, I believe, starting on April 1st, but the costs will be tracked and trued up when they file for their next rates, so the company will never recover more or less than 100% of their costs.
Sounds good to me.
We have a motion and a second. Is there further discussion? Sensing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Motion's approved.
Okay, and then the final item on my agenda, I move the commission deem the applications for a waiver of procedures and time schedules, corridor certificate, and route permit complete, and issue a notice of filing and notice of hearing in case number PU11680, Montana Dakota Utility Company's proposed 24-mile, 10-inch diameter natural gas pipeline in Morton County, North Dakota.
Second.
Okay, so this is the connector for MDU, the new gas fired power plant adjacent to the Heskett Station. This will be connecting their fuel source. It's 24-mile, 10-inch diameter natural gas pipeline. We've been back and forth with them. The staff has been on March 25th. They provide additional information, including clarifying that all the residents along the route are outside of city limits, copies of waivers been signed to date, and a discussion that no reasonable alternatives in groundwater mitigation existed and groundwater mitigation efforts are taken care of. So this is just a notice of a filing for an opportunity for a hearing. I believe will we be scheduling this hearing during our scheduling portion of the meeting? Okay. And that concludes my description, unless anyone has questions.
We have a motion and a second.
I just had a couple comments, Darrell. If I could, I think Julie explained it perfectly, just to follow on to when we had the original hearing on the Heskett Station itself, there was a lot of questions about this line coming in as to the emergency response plans that would have to change with the concerns about being close to the houses. And so, as Julie pointed out, there's been waivers signed by a lot of the residents, but I look forward to a very good hearing on this with bringing in this gas flow into this area. So it's going to be a good hearing, I think.
Any further discussion? Sensing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Motion is approved.
Okay. Anything else, Commissioner Fedorchak?
That's it for me.
Okay. This might be our longest meeting on record. All right. I'll just do a couple events. Thanks to Commissioner Fedorchak's guidance, we now actually have a schedule of announcements we can keep track of instead of having 10 different sheets. So thank you, Julie, for that. We have our legislative tracking meeting tomorrow. We have, a regular commission item today. Looking forward to, we have some informal hearings that will be starting as soon as we're done here. Work session April 9th on the Keystone Pipeline, some noise concerns. And really, quite honestly, nothing jumps out at me except for the public input sessions coming up for our potential rate case with Xcel Energy. Other than that, nothing out of the ordinary. So any other comments before we open up for questions? Randy or Julie? Okay, with that, I'd be happy to try to answer any questions that might be out there.
Actually, just a few. Just first off, Earth Harvest Mills is where in Wells County? Is that Fessenden or is that Harvey? Is that close to Harvey?
That's at Harvey.
Harvey, okay. And they've gone through numerous permutations before they became Earth Harvest Mills, too, I assume.
I'm not sure if Earth Harvest Mills was the first title or not, but the first licensee. I'll call on Sue. She has more history with this.
As a licensed elevator, yes. That's the first name that they were issued under. According to the corporate papers that we received from the Secretary of State's office, they did have a prior name before Earth Harvest Mills.
That's the way I understood it. And the concern here before they're allowed to, you know, the order is withdrawn, is that they make sure that the bottom line is to make sure farmers are going to get paid. Am I correct in that?
That is really the biggest concern. Both farmers that have already sold grain there and farmers that will be coming in the future.
So they don't have a date when they want this done, do they? Or just as soon as possible?
Not a set date. The bar seems to always keep moving.
But one of the concerns, Dave, if I could, that it's interesting that they requested a formal hearing now, and we'll deal with that in the administrative portion, but this is not a new issue where there's been people out there that have not been paid according to the schedules, and the commission has been tracking this closely for quite some time. But I will tell you that I think that with the addition of my colleagues on there, I think that they looked at this case as well as I did, and this is it. They either pay their people or they might be done. And I think that was the significance of this motion today, is that kind of laid out there in our work session that all these things have been tried. The memorandum of agreement was signed to by the elevator and the staff that they would do certain things by February. Those things didn't happen. And so now we very clearly laid out, these are the provisions that once they're complete, we will consider. If you haven't laid out those provisions, then don't bring it forward. So we'll deal with the request for a formal hearing, which I think might tie all this back together. But one of the concerns is, we want to make sure we've got a good record developed, and I think that we've done that, but a formal hearing might really button it all up.
If I might just add to that, I think that this issue has been a balancing act for the commission in terms of protecting the public from any future losses or potential losses, while also helping the company work through this process, giving them enough latitude to work through the process so all their existing customers can be paid. We want them to succeed. Nothing would make us happier than for them to succeed so that all their customers can be paid. Meanwhile, I felt and my colleagues have felt that the cease and desist is there to protect any further losses. And until we can be assured that will be the case upon lifting it, we have to keep it in place. So that's why the contingencies were so carefully crafted in terms of the conditions by which they could have the cease and desist lifted.
And the only other thing is Bison 4 is now pending. Do you know, if you added all the Bison projects together, how many megawatts that would be?
I'm going to turn over to Jerry on that. It's over 300, we would know. Is it 400, Jerry?
I think 4 roughly, if you count the 1, 2, it might be 5. Let me get that number for you.
Okay, no problem.
But your point, David, these are some big projects that are now in front of the commission. There's two that are in excess of 200 megawatts, one that's 150 megawatts. We're used to seeing 50 to 70 megawatt range. These are some major projects that are coming in.
And the thought is that the production tax credit, the action to get this last-minute budget deal at the end of 2012 has helped restart the industries, kind of.
I think there's no doubt the production tax credit has had part of this equation, but also I think the availability of transmission in the state is increased. So with the approval of the CapEx line in the eastern part of the state, with the Minn Kota moving forward with some of their major construction line, with the Square Butte substation being completed, I think it's a combination of the tax credit and the ability of transmission, which ties into some of the natural gas. We still need transmission lines in the west, but the eastern part of the grid in the state is looking a lot better than it was a few years ago. Good enough. Okay. All right. With that, do we need to take a 5-minute break before we reconvene? Let's do that real quick. Let's take a 5-minute break and start again at approximately 2:20. So we'll close the formal commission meeting.